1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Good evening. The Nighthawks podcast
is intended for you, not your children.
The following episode contains adult language. Listen, constriction is advised.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I am Vulture. Beyond recall.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Now, there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
Men drilling by night, underground meeting places, pagan rituals. Well, anything's possible.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this special express edition of the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for those of you who like to stay up late. Stay up late with us tonight, right now, watching these films with us. Some recent watches that we just, gosh darn it, have not had time to talk to on the show proper, because we've got some special programming coming down the pike your way. If you want to dust off the old kangaroo leather bullwhip and brown felt fedora, not to put too fine a point on it. But yeah, Matt, I think, first off, how are you doing? You know, how's life been?
I'm fine.
Good. So tonight's episode, I think we're going to do a little discussion of what we've been watching lately. This is something we usually do in episode, but like I said, we're giving you guys a little special taste. It's an all what are you watching episode for the Nighthawks today. Anything else to add?
I feel like I should add something, but I have nothing ready.
What have you been watching?
I've been watching some stuff. I watched The Mitchells versus the Machines.
I hear that is delightful, and I have every excuse to watch it because there's a kid in my life now, but I haven't done it. This is a good jam, huh?
You know, you should really say like a kid that you're parenting. You shouldn't just imply that you just got one somewhere.
Okay, that's true.
The Nighthawks is a no buying kids at a store podcast.
Little 6-year-old Daphne, you've heard her on the show before. She is somebody who is calling me dad now because that's who we are to each other now. And I guess now's as good a time as any to announce that I have also made a child instead of just kind of having one come into my life at age 6. My partner and I are expecting our first baby in late October. He will truly be the monster heralded by this year's Monstoberfest.
This is our baby.
He's adorable. He's perfect. What's his name?
It was Agony. We went through all the books, all the usual baby names.
Lucifer.
Benito.
Mao.
And then we came to our senses. Something simple. Something a child could live with.
Pubert.
But the Mitchells versus the Machines, how is this, like, sell me on this. I know nothing about it.
So I would say that it's like the perfect movie if the parents don't want to check out whether kids watch a kids movie and they want a kids movie that has something in it for a mix of ages. This is pretty good. It's real fast, real snappy, and very successfully modern.
Katie used to be my little buddy. We'd go on nature hikes and skip rocks.
What's that down there, killer?
Are you excited for camp? Don't make me go.
We used to be so connected.
Hey, Dad, smile.
You know, you could experience things a whole lot better without that camera.
Dad, this is how I experience things.
I don't think...
Yes, tomorrow I'm finally leaving for college. But in the meantime, I made you guys this goodbye video.
You know what? This is our last night together. Oh. How about we make 10 seconds of family eye contact? Starting... Put your phone down. Now. No, you're allowed to blink. It's just eye contact.
Ugh, finally!
No screens at the table. Lynn, why are you kicking me? I don't understand.
I'm just gonna...
No, look, I'll watch it.
Dad, it's too late.
Look, I want to watch it!
Dad, this is exactly why I'm excited to leave tomorrow.
Katie.
I know you can fix this.
I'm alive, I'm alive!
Yes!
I'm alive!
Why do you need all that to take me to the airport?
I canceled your plane ticket to college. We are going to drive you to school on a cross-country road trip as a family. Behold.
And now I present tricking Rick Mitchell into kissing the dog.
Dang it, Katie. Dang it, Katie.
Hey, Dad, can you check the trunk?
Yeah, sure. Dang it, Katie. Hey, kids, there's supposed to be some great ice around here.
Just a sec, Dad.
We hear a pal about to drop our biggest invention yet.
Meet the Helper Bot. We promise you they will never, ever turn evil.
Mom, what is that?
Greetings, humans.
Technology rising up.
Sayonara.
Robots roaming the streets.
What is this strange creature? Dog, pig, dog, pig, dog, loaf of bread.
The Mitchells have always been weird.
No time to wash your hands.
Don't worry, I never do.
That's what makes us great.
But what the dad decides to do is cash her plane ticket in and drive her across country, Holiday Road, National Lampoon style. And while they are on that road trip, the in-continuity version of Siri, who is called Pal, crosses the Skynet threshold and decides to take over the world. And so only the dad's sort of Luddite, no phones on the trip rule spares them. They're uniquely positioned because of where they are in the country. So they get to take a crack at trying to fight their way into the Apple store and, upload the kill code.
Well, here's my question, Matt. We have all of these movies about the ways technology can go wrong and hurt us. Where are the brave little toasters? Where are the stories about technology that just wants to find us and snuggle us?
There's brave little toasters in this. There's a whole swarm of them. What this movie does really well, true learning is had by all and sundry. The mom is obsessed with their neighbors, who are this very cultivated family with very perfect social media. And the little brother's kind of withdrawn. He's very codependent on his sister and very mad that she's leaving. The sister makes a very persuasive pro-technology. Like, I'm alone in my little town and I found sucker in the group that I met through this computer. They don't take a one-dimensional phones are bad stance. And they also limit the unneeded pot shots they take at the parents, too. It has that deafness that you talk about when you talk about, like, park and recreation. Just could have been more cookie cutter, and all of the pratfalls were avoided through smart writing. And also, the pug is really cool.
You know, Matt, one that both of us watched, and I think we both have something at least a little bit to say about it. We almost did an episode on this. We have an unwritten rule, and it's not one that we adhere to 100% of the time, but we generally don't like to talk about movies that we don't have a lot of good things to say about. And I think this one was ultimately scrapped because we didn't feel there was enough good things we could say about it, although there is some good here. But we both caught... And this was advance availability on HBO Max. I don't think it's there anymore, although I imagine it'll be there eventually. But the new Angelina Jolie vehicle, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Why'd they put you in a fire tower?
Well, I'm just lucky, I guess.
I read the wind wrong. I should have gone to them.
Then you'd be dead too.
That's our job.
Hey, stop! I'm not gonna hurt you.
I want to see where the blood's coming from.
It's not my blood.
You in trouble? Anyone else in trouble?
My dad said if anything happened, I should find someone I can trust. Are you someone I can trust?
We promise absolutes. Act accordingly.
Those men that came for your father, did you see their faces? That's them.
Element gods will cut you down.
Give him something else to worry about.
Tell that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
I had questions. Like, I had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
It just was one of those, like, you could see the number of drafts that had been through. You could see that, like, a lot of people tried to, very monkeyed with dicked with movie. Like, there are elements in it that didn't make sense to be in it, that like somebody should have cut out. There's like a characters that feel like they're just unnecessary, real Baroque subplots that aren't necessary to just kind of get people onto the playing field.
Well, and
it's just kind of a misfire. And I honestly think it would have been shelved if not for COVID.
That's fair. The synopsis of the film is that Angelina Jolie is a smoke jumper, suffers some trauma out on the field during an accident. She feels personally responsible, so she's been put on fire tower duty, basically just smoke spotting from rudimentary living quarters high above the coniferous forest of, I believe in the movie, it's entirely in Montana. She's lamenting her position there. She's lamenting this trauma that she suffered. There's also a local town police officer, sheriff, played by John Bernthal. Apparently they have some sort of romantic past, although that's not dwelt on. John Bernthal's wife is pregnant, and they run a camp in their spare time for survival, teaching kids survival scenarios. In the meantime, his brother-in-law is showing up with secret information that's going to bring down the axe on a lot of powerful people, has his kid in tow. The kid becomes lost in the forest during a major forest fire. He's being chased down by hired thugs. He's also running from the fire, attempting to survive in the outdoors. And of course, his path is going to eventually cross paths with Angelina Jolie. Now, this whole thing is based on a book by Michael Cortia, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, of the same name that I read, and it was actually one of the last books that my folks and I got to pass around when my mom was still alive. We really enjoyed this fun, action-y yarn. It took place in our backyard. It's southern Montana, northern Wyoming. It's like, oh, this is really neat. And there were just a lot of plot changes that were made from the book to the movie. Michael Cortia originally took a stab at this. He's one of the credited writers on it. But there are just some changes here that really, I think I know what happened. I think it's because this is a movie that managed to snag Angelina Jolie, and her character is not necessarily the A character through much of the book. You don't get Angelina Jolie for your movie, and she's not the lead. And so I think some of the concessions made in that direction led to some other changes, and ultimately just led to a really sloppy movie.
Well, yeah, you were saying in the book, the Bernthal character is more the protagonist?
He's not a sheriff, and I don't think he has any kind of previous relationship with the Angelina Jolie character in the book. But a lot of the book is he and the kid being out in the wilderness and trying to survive. As the kid is sent there, part of a witness relocation thing. In the book, he witnesses a hit, and that's why the bad guys are after him. So they send him to this survival program for troubled youth as kind of a hideout. And once the bad guys arrive on the scene, it's John Bernthal's character and the kid out to survive until the hammer drops on the fire. In this movie, John Bernthal and the kid, I don't think, share screen time, but for a few minutes.
Yeah, it seems like just the execution was missed here. Like, either cast her as him, or could have been handled so many other ways. And then in the movie, they have the dad give the kid a thumb drive that he has to hold on to instead of being the witness. He's just a courier for information that his dad uncovered at work. And that introduces like a set of questions, and they don't. It's not the witness protection people that move the kid onto the board. It's his dad drives him across country, and you're just like, why is all this going on? Like, this is just way too busy to get where we need to. Like it would have been better to start the movie with a crawl that explained that the kid was in Witsec.
Well, Matt, circling back to family movies, one of the things I've watched recently, I finally broke my COVID theater post-vaccination bubble. Took the family, and we watched Raya the Last Dragon, which is the newest one not from Pixar, but from Disney Animation, which is the studio that brought us such hits as Tangled and the indelible and ever-present Frozen in our household. I was really glad that Raya came out, because we needed something to kind of take that Frozen place,
Frozen,
to take the throne from Frozen a little bit. I have heard Let It Go many, many times. I'm just new to the parenting game. Like, some of y'all parents have been doing this for several years, and I don't know how you handled it. But I thought this movie was delightful. It was released originally on Disney Plus for an extra fee.
Let's catch you up. My name is Raya. Our lands have been at war for as long as we can remember. Our people never see eye to eye.
My daughter, I believe our people can come together again, but someone has to take the first step.
Now, in order to restore peace, we must find the last dragon.
I wish to join this fellowship of butt-kickery.
Let's go. We'll have to watch our backs. We're not the only ones looking. 6 years of searching. Please let this be it. Almighty Sisu!
Who said that?
We really need your help.
I'm gonna be real with you. I'm not, like, the best dragon. Have you ever done, like, a group project, but there's, like, that one kid who didn't pitch in as much, but still ended up with the same grade?
We're doomed.
You and the dragon are coming with me.
My sword here says we're not. The world's broken. You can't trust anyone.
Maybe it's broken because you don't trust anyone. You just have to take the first step.
And so I was seeing it for the first time, and I was pretty delighted by it. Fairly generic Disney story, kind of the Wizard of Oz thing, where a chosen one is sent to gather a bunch of friends and rise up and unite people under a cause. But I will tell you, there's a little short that played before this movie that wrecked me. And I'm talking like first 10 minutes of Up wrecked me. So much so, like, Disney needs to stop doing this because I am so wrecked from the short that it's hard for me to engage with the first fun parts of the movie. The name of the short is Us Again, and it's just a little no-dialogue story about an older couple who is reminiscing and rediscovering their youth through dance. That was the whole experience for me. Raya the Last Dragon was great. It was cute. There was action. There were some laugh lines. It was great to see a female lead in an action movie. It gave Daphne something to engage with. I felt really good about that. But really, the short is the thing that stuck with me, and as an adult viewer, and would probably be my strongest recommend out of that experience. But Raya the Last Dragon's not anything to miss either. I think it's a really fun Disney film. Did you end up catching this at all?
No, I don't like dragons.
But do you like Awkwafina? That's the question.
Yeah.
She is the voice of the dragon, and I, much like when Patton Oswalt was the voice in Ratatouille, I love that the singer of My Vag is now a voice for a major Disney title character. My Vag feel like winning the lottery. Yo, shit got turned down from eHarmony. My Vag, one best Vag. Yo, Vag, one best supporting Vag. Yeah. It's time that we let the world know. Bitch, your vag look like Janet Reno. Awkwafina's a genius, and her vagina is 50 times better than a penis. It's time that we let the world know. Bitch, your vag.
I don't really hate dragons, by the way. That was just shtick.
So, Matt, I heard that this is something I haven't done, but have you learned a lesson about family this week?
I did learn about the fam. I also learned that you can drive all the way into space.
What are we calling this edition of Fast and the Furious? Is this just F9? Is that what we're going with?
I think it's Furious 9, something like that. I don't know. If you are asking yourself, how can you drive a car into space? How does a car get into space? Just don't watch. You're not ready. Yeah. The new Vin Diesel, Chris Bridges, lots of other people installment.
I mean, The Rock.
Jordana Brewster. The Rock's actually, Hobbs and Shaw are not in this one.
Oh, they got their own movie, so they didn't get to come back for F9, huh?
Although Helen Mirren as Shaw's mother is in this one, and quite a bit, which is awesome.
Our cast is getting so huge. Who do we get?
Helen Mirren!
Yes, actually. That's who they get. Don't question it.
No, this is a series we talked a little bit about this that I turned around on. And I think it's when the movies stopped taking themselves seriously that I was kind of able to stop taking them seriously myself. The first one was fine. The second one, not my favorite. The third one, really not my favorite. The fourth one, hey, this is kind of fun. The fifth one, oh, holy crap. And it's just been a fun thrill ride ever since then. But yeah, we had to kind of get out of the douchey street racer who's going to take whose car subplots. Once we have espionage and like gadget cars and freaky stunts, I'm here for that.
Yeah, and these movies, like, they've stopped making sense. I don't know. I think the only thing left is for them to cross over with the Michael Bay Transformers. They keep just upping how little sense they make and to the point that it's becoming truly sublime.
Well, it's important to note that Hobbs and Shaw, which is the spinoff that came out, like, what, last year? I mean, the whole premise of that is that the souped-up machine is a person. It's a Idris Elba is a souped-up human android, cyborg, something.
He has like a biochip that he's got a thing.
He's enhanced. He's a mechanically enhanced human. He is neither Terminator nor Johnny Mnemonic.
He's pretty close. And that was a fun movie, and it got away with some of the things it did by just fully admitting it was a piece of science fiction.
Sure.
You know? They were just like, yes, he can do it. He's a robot, and it will take both of you to stop him, you know? And it also had some great scenes where the Rock extends the family by going back to Samoa. And that stuff was pretty cool. I think they're not movies for people that are downers. Like this is a movie that you're just going to have to go with.
Yeah, it's weird to say, but I think that was really the sign of me maturing as a film fan. The day that I was mature enough to appreciate the maturity of the Fast and the Furious franchise is the day I was complete as a film critic.
I used to live my life a quarter mile at a time. But things changed. My father now. I will always be in your heart.
Little Brian, I have a gift for you.
Your daddy gave me this.
Now I'm gonna give it to you. It's very special. It's for protection from what's coming.
All right, Dom. What's next?
No matter how fast you are,
I am not to be compared to you.
No one outruns their past.
I am more easy, you trying your best to become me.
And mine just caught up to me.
Been a long time, Dom.
So we're up against a master thief, assassin, high performance driver. Who is he?
Jacob is Dom's brother.
Your whole life, you pushed yourself to be faster than Dom. Smarter than Dom. Stronger than Dom.
But could you kill him? Because I'm ready if you are.
There's nothing more powerful than the love of family. But you turn that into anger, there's nothing more dangerous.
Maybe this is the end, but we won't go out together.
You know I'd ride to the death with you.
Let's get to work.
Please tell me that's not a Pontiac Fiero strapped to a rocket engine?
Impressive. I know.
No. No, that's not impressive.
Because I'm not kidding. I was pretty down on these movies for a hot minute.
You didn't like the people that liked them.
Well,
let's be real.
I mean, eventually I came around on that. But yeah, I'll confess that was a prejudice I had, an unfair prejudice.
Well, and they were the for the people that don't know, because hypothetically we could have listeners that were not born yet when the Fast and Furious 1 came out, right? The first Fast and the Furious was almost nothing to do with the zany globe-trotting Mission Impossible feel that they have now.
It was street racing with unbelievable stunts. That's as deep as it went. It was an undercover cop, illegal street races, and unbelievable car stunts.
Yeah, it was a crew of street racers who were also pulling heist style road hijackings, and an FBI agent with a checkered street racing past trying to infiltrate their group and catch them. It was a soft Point Break reboot was what it was. It sold a lot of cars and it pushed a lot of aesthetic. For a while they were car movies, wanting to be about like this year's new hot little turbo four car or really gorgeously restored muscle cars, you know. But if that's what you want, I would say throw in Gone in 60 Seconds instead, you know. It's their Vanishing Point, or
the 90s
Death Proof, like car
the
movie.
90s Gone in 60 Seconds is something we covered as an episode, so maybe you should watch that one. I will say there is a fun overlap there. I was working in the theater when Gone in 60 Seconds came out, and we used to get calls from the local police department asking us when the movie was getting out, because inevitably somebody would walk out of that theater and want to gun their car through the parking lot and they'd get immediately pulled over. Well, then I had a friend who was working in a different theater run by the same company when Fast and the Furious came out, and it was the exact same thing. The second the kid gets out of the Fast and the Furious movie, he hops in his little Honda Civic and blows through the parking lot, runs a stop sign, and there's a cop there waiting for him because he knows there's somebody excited coming out of that movie. Bad boys, what you want?
In the immortal words of Daniel Tosh, you know what's faster than your murdered out Honda Civic that you put $10,000 worth of work into? Any Audi.
Well, Matt, something we both have caught a little bit of. I think you might be one episode ahead of me. We've been watching Marvel's Loki.
I know what this place is. The timekeepers have built quite the circus. And I see the clowns are playing their parts to perfection.
Big metaphor guy.
I love it.
Makes you sound super smart.
I am smart.
I know.
Okay.
Okay.
Please sign to verify this is everything you've ever said.
This is absurd.
Sign this too.
We protect the proper flow of time.
You picked up the Tesseract breaking reality.
I want you to help us fix it.
Why me?
I need your unique Loki perspective.
Do I get a weapon?
Nah.
You really believe in this Loki variant?
Luckily, he believes in himself enough for the both of us.
Bye. It is adorable that you think you could possibly manipulate me.
Loki is, what if you had an Indiana Jones type character in the world of Brazil?
Brazil, you mean Terry Gilliam's Brazil, the movie, not the country.
Correct. Yeah, Loki is the familiar Marvel character, the trickster Norse god Loki, enmeshed in a world that lampshades the ridiculousness of the Marvel multiverse theory. It has a very high and low sci-fi feel, where it's very based on the mid-century aesthetic. Again, reminiscent of, I keep plugging this game, Play Control. Play Control, people. It's fun. We have a Loki. The idea is that when people do certain actions, they splinter off the main timeline and start a little pocket multiverse. This is undesirable. An agency exists to keep the multiverse tidy. Essentially, what we have is a buddy cop film here, a buddy cop piece where we have Owen Wilson's Agent Mobius and is the orthodox good cop paired with the roguish Loki bad cop, except it goes right to shit pretty fast. It's kind of cool because we get to see, even though it has kind of a fun swashbuckling tone, we do get to see what makes Loki formidable. The first episode kind of stages Loki as caught. His magic doesn't work in the pocket dimension that the Time Variance Authority sits in, and he has no more powers than a normal, you know, normal 6'4" Hemsworth brother would have.
He's a Hiddleston. He was adopted.
But he's Hemsworth's brother.
That's true.
You don't want to date Larry Hemsworth because he's just 6'4". I get it. And then Loki is forced to rely on his vaunted wits with his power stripped away. And the game of cat and mouse that ensues is kind of interesting because you get this relationship with this guy who wants to be seen as a sort of noble, purposeful, like kind of eidolon of trickery and levity. And he also has to confront that he's kind of a weasel sometimes. And then he also has to confront that he's capable of great things and doesn't always do them. It's very much a gifted kid meme from Facebook turned into a movie, right? It's a lot of fun. I would say so far, it's got me hooked a little better than even Winter Soldier or WandaVision did. What do you think?
You know, like I said, I'm only two episodes in. I think at the time of this record, you've done three. I really like where they're going. I like how creative and different this is from the mainline Marvel Universe. And that's what I've really enjoyed about some of these ancillary series that have come out post-Endgame. Which one was the last one? Time Wars? I can't remember.
I don't know.
Closing out the Thanos chapter on the universe. And then we've had this Disney series of Marvel come out. I really liked WandaVision. I thought that was super creative. It was the Vision story that I had been wanting out of the Avengers franchise that I never got. I think it was a really neat exploration of Scarlet Witch. I think it was fun because it's tapping into that nostalgia vein that's oh so popular right now. And it was able to tap into so many of those and do so creatively in canon that it worked. I think Falcon Winter Soldier was probably the most mainstream feeling of these series that have come out. But I also think that it was a deeper character exploration than we've gotten out of the films. And I really appreciated that. And it was a movie that was, or it was a series that was saying something too. I think there's a lot of political allegory there that I was able to pick up on and appreciate. And it's a satisfying series that gave me more of an appreciation for those characters than I had out of the Avengers films 100%.
I liked how halfway through the Winter Soldier, they had to make the bad guys like up their evil level because they were making too much sense.
And then Loki, I think, is arguably the most creative out of all of them. And I see what they're doing, and there's a multiverse, which is going to give us an opportunity maybe to play with some of the characters that have not been featured in the Marvel movies because of rights tie-ins or copyright, you know. The Marvel properties were all over at some point. However, it is kind of weird because now this is definitely Marvel stepping into DC territory where previously it had been the other way around. Now, I will say, I think DC has been playing and building a multiverse out of necessity just to try and get all their franchises in order. DC is doing it to straighten out their universe, and Marvel is kind of having to, not necessarily retcon, but is definitely having to do some backbuilding to support this. Now, I should say that the real champion of the multiverse theory is probably one of the best superhero films we've seen in the last couple of years, which is Into the Spider-Verse, which, while technically a Marvel movie, is actually the Sony branch that is just cooperating with Disney Marvel. So I do want to mention that. But yeah, it's an interesting set of experiences we're going through as we watch these giant franchises begin to reach out and branch and blossom. So far, I'm not really hating anything out of the Marvel Studios.
Speaking of the DC multiverse, another thing that dropped just recently is the often sidelined Black Lightning, which doesn't get a lot of publicity, but it's one of the better Arrowverse shows, featuring Jefferson Pierce, the hardest working man in the hero business. Full-time high school principal, full-time superhero. That's not easy. That's not like just taking pictures of yourself for the Daily Planet. Or the Daily Bugle. God. The nerve of Superman, right? Like how, I'm just going to write about global events, you know? who I happen to completely shape. I hate Superman so much. Team Lex. I watched something for Screener Squad that was cool. It's called Vicious Fun. It's kind of a bottle movie. The pitch is, what if there was a self-help group for serial killers and it fell apart?
I like it.
That's about all there is to it. And dot, dot, dot. With, and mayhem ensues.
Like, this is what you said to me. A group of serial killers attending a 12-step meeting tried to kill me and my accomplice before disappearing, leaving us with three dead bodies?
Well, two dead bodies.
It's one word, right? Bullshit.
Sorry to interrupt your meeting.
Thanks so much for coming out. How do you maintain your lifestyle and keep your urges under control?
I murder the same victim repeatedly.
Just be a mask.
Have you ever bitten into a kidney?
What, is this some kind of support group for serial killers?
Why are you here?
It's complicated.
I thought you had our little group sessions on lockdown. Are you, Skinner? A slicer, dicer, corpse humper?
How did you get in here?
I got drunk at the bar. I passed out in a closet for a few hours, okay?
911.
Yes. Oh my God, it's horrible.
Now, Bonnie told me that people are coming here to try and kill him. And maybe us.
What? Us? Why?
Tony!
Quarter!
It got really messy. I like it messy sometimes.
It's just a very fun, very, very well shot, very well acted movie with a lot of stunt performers in lead roles. Just fun. Just vicious fun. It's accurately titled.
Hi, I'm Kirk Linger.
And I'm Alan Barber. And we're the hosts of a new podcast called You've Never Heard This?
Each week, Alan and I pick an album that is beloved by one and unfamiliar to the other.
We discuss the album track by track, going into band bios, inspirations for the song, or why the band means so ding-dang much to us.
Join us every Tuesday as we bring you this steamy, musical love stew.
You've Never Heard This is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or basically any other old place you can think of.
Geeks, nerds, devotees of all worlds, lend me your ears. A community of inclusion and passion awaits you at oneofus.net. Movie and music reviews, debates on books and beer, deep dives into comics and games. There's something for everyone because everyone loves something. Podcast posts daily with subscriptions. You get video content as well. All are welcome because in this world of fandom and fanaticism, all of us are in this together. Your love of pop culture and entertainment makes you one of us already. So join us today at oneofus.net.
We do contribute to the One of Us Network family of podcasts, specifically their Screener Squad podcast is something that you'll catch Matt or I, or sometimes even Matt and I, over there talking about some current release films. I was actually able to check out, this is a new one from Netflix, the film from first-time feature director Kimmy Gatewood. And starring Eliza Schlesinger, the name of the movie is Good on Paper. And I was really excited to hop on that one. I kind of elbowed my way to the front of the line for a shot at that review. And it's because we've talked about Eliza Schlesinger on the show before. She was the romantic interest for Donnie Wahlberg's Spencer character in Spencer Confidential.
Donnie Hamburgers. Call him Donnie Burgers.
Well, out of that episode, I was so taken with her in that movie that I went and checked out, I think, virtually all of her Netflix specials. And honestly, I think she's probably one of my favorite working comedians currently. Just really consistently had me in stitches. And then Kimmy Gatewood is a filmmaker and actress, probably has the most heat right now. She played one of the lady wrestlers on Glow, which was a Netflix series that was cut short far too soon because of COVID. She actually was a co-director years ago on a documentary called Nerdcore Rising, a film about nerdcore hip-hop and specifically MC Frontalot, who is an artist that works in that genre. But Kimmy Gatewood was a co-director on that movie with Nagin Farsad, who is a working stand-up comedian, authoress. She has a great podcast, a political podcast worth checking out. But I was really excited for this film. I like Eliza Schlesinger. I like Kimmy Gatewood. I like following Kimmy Gatewood's career. I was excited that this was a first feature film directorial debut for her.
I always respected that you weren't obsessed with marriage. It was okay that you hadn't reached all your goals by the age of 35.
Wow.
Yeah?
I'm 34.
Do you look 35? A salty 35.
That compliment started great and just...
For me, the story was not about love at first sight.
But you're a comedian, right? Andrea Singer. I've seen you before.
And what do you do?
Hedge funds. I got this Yale alumni event I have to go to.
What's a Yale?
Oh, Yale is a prestigious school.
I'm fucking with you. Yeah, I know what Yale is. He seemed nice, normal, like an accountant who loves missionary.
I want you to be my girlfriend. You are so witty and sexy. You're exquisite.
In that moment, I didn't want to be with anyone but him.
You don't really know anything about him, do you? I mean, you know that
he bought a house months ago. So where is it?
Beverly Hills.
But like, where is it specifically?
Beverly Hills.
You ever notice that he always has the perfect answer for everything?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Ah! I'm taking Dennis to meet my cousin Brett. It's a big step.
It's a big step.
Andrea said you played at Yale.
Come on, baby. Show him how it's done. Oh my God, he's so old.
Oh, this is so embarrassing. My father has a bad back. I have a bad back.
Bad back isn't hereditary.
We both got in a car accident.
And you both hurt your back in the same exact
place. We both hurt our backs in the same place.
But ultimately, it's you can tell that this is an Eliza Schlesinger stage bit that was kind of inflated to 90 minutes. And some of the humor in this is farcical stand-up humor, Eliza Schlesinger level humor, but there are other bits that are played very realistically, and the emotional implications of some of the shenanigans that we go through are explored and felt. So it made for a movie that was just not tonally symmetrical, or not even symmetrical, it was just tonally rough. I hit this movie entirely cold. I didn't even know what I was expecting. At some points I was expecting maybe this is going to be a broad farce like Bridesmaids or The Hangover, something on that level, and there are parts of this movie that are kind of on that level. But then there are also some really serious maudlin kind of exploring ourselves, and then there's also a B story where Elijah Schlesinger's character is a struggling actress, but she is also, much like Schlesinger herself, a very successful comedian. And so there's this, why can't I make it if I could just get the right audition? And I'm kind of sitting there with my arms crossed in front of me going, I don't know, lady, like, you're headlining at the Comedy Store. Like, I don't know how sorry I can feel for your career. But some of those things are addressed. Some of them are addressed better than others. Some of them are not addressed at all. There's threads here that are never picked up. There is some really fantastic chemistry between Eliza Schlesinger and Margaret Cho, who plays a best friend in the character. Those scenes are really delightful. The male lead in this, who plays a character that we're not supposed to know if he is a nice guy creep or if he's just genuinely a nice guy. There's some question and some farce over whether or not Eliza Schlesinger is being paranoid. But really, it doesn't commit to any one of these things. The male character is at times a caricature and at times a very real person. And it's just, unfortunately, this was not the movie that was going to hook me, but I am excited to see Eliza Schlesinger do more acting performances, and I'm excited to see Kimmy Gatewood do more directing work. I just don't think this was the movie for me, though.
Speaking of comics and caricatures of males, or males doing caricatures at any rate, I watched Bo Burnham's Inside.
So I know you want to be kind of guarded on what you're telling me about this, because I've gotten a high recommend and you're wanting me to hit it cold. So what can you tell me without spoiling it?
I'm just going to use my 6 on this one. I appear to be the only person capable of thinking this was just kind of okay.
Oh, okay.
Like everybody, this is one of those ones where everybody I know is like, freaking out, or they're real, real like, thanks, I hate it. I'm just the only one I've yet to meet who is not super polarized.
Huh, interesting.
Scheduled. Robert's been a little depressed. No.
like a medium Bo Burnham fan. I like Bo Burnham's music a lot, and I liked him in Promising Young Woman. Essentially, Inside as a comedy special is an album with some wraparound, and it's very focused on the mental depredations of quarantine, and it's just the material that he filmed in his studio at home over the period of the infinite March of 2020. I don't know, like, I want to watch it one more time. I was left kind of feeling a little weird about it. I didn't feel the need to rush out and immediately shake people and tell them they have to go watch it. And I didn't hate it the way some people that are really, like, there are some people that are just diehard musical comedy is bad, you know? There's an anti-scub squad out that found it a bit pretentious. I'm right at a six, and I'm curious what others think.
I liked Bo Burnham's first album. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was super clever. I think he's really intelligent. I think he's very funny. But there was a point where the things that I had seen him most recently in, keeping in mind I did not keep up with his career particularly, but I caught him in a guest spot on Parks and Rec where he plays a very up-his-own-butt country artist. And then there was Promising Young Woman recently, which is a movie that does not always cast him in the best light. So there's part of me that has to get over the hump that I need to remind myself there's separation from art and artist, and that Bo Burnham is not just a giant asshole. And that, no, this is a comedian that you have enjoyed. He's just had a few memorable roles where he's playing a very convincing dickhead. And so I have to get over that hump, but this is one that people have been kind of hanging on me. It's like, dude, you especially need to check this one out. So it's something I'm eager to look at. I have not yet made the time.
How about the digital side of things? You've been playing anything? Been playing the games?
This is going to take me down a weird rabbit hole, but I embarked on a journey that actually begins with our Oscar czar, Cameron Maris. He picked up for me the Criterion edition of the Samurai Trilogy, which is three films from the 1950s from Japan, starring Toshirô Mifune as historical Japanese swordsman. And this trilogy of films is actually based on a novel, a Japanese novel, that is regarded by many, and I think this superlative was given out before it was kind of a controversial statement, but it's called The Japanese Gone with the Wind. I watched this trilogy of films that Cameron picked up for me. I really enjoyed them. It got me on a good Toshirô Mifune kick for a while. And just wanting to whet my appetite for more and knowing more about this person, this historical figure, I decided to read this historical fiction novel, which is about 1,000 pages. And I will say, I am not the most disciplined reader. This took me a while to get through. And I don't think that's a criticism of the material. To the contrary, it's very much the opposite. I think the fact that I stuck with it for 7 months, taking little breaks here and there and just kind of letting the story capture me when it could, I think is a testament that this is an engaging enough story that it engaged a person who is not a disciplined reader to finish. And so I just recently finished that, and it was a great journey. It's something that I think if you're into historical fiction, if you're into epic stories, and if you're into samurai stories, this is definitely a high recommend. If you're a fan of Yojimbo, if you're a fan of Lone Wolf and Cub, we did an episode on that, check that out, but I'd also recommend this book. And so that got me on a weird samurai kick, which brings me to my point in my own meandering way, that I have recently procured a PlayStation 4, and the one game on there, out of the many that I've purchased, that has occupied the most amount of my time is a samurai game, The Ghosts of Tsushima, which is, again, fantastic. Number one, this is my first experience with a PS4, so I'm going to fall a little all over myself saying that the graphics are fantastic, the overall look of the game is beautiful, it scratches an itch that I have had since the days of PlayStation 1, playing Bushido Blade, and it's just a really fun Japanese feudal era warrior game that's not quite as unrealistic or gamified as, say, like a Dynasty Warriors. And so it's, I don't know, I've been enjoying that, having a lot of fun with that, but I should say I'm not much of a gamer. It does say a lot that this thing has managed to kind of capture me and engross me to the level that it has.
I was going to plug for you, the Ultimate Final Mass Effect trilogy has come out.
Oh, really?
And I think that might be the version for Trevor. It's a chance to just play through the trilogy in continuity with one Commander Shepard.
I see.
I know there was a fan outcry about the ending or whatever at one point. Don't let that hold you back. It's a really great outer space story. Epic writing. Very good. You got Keith David in there. A bunch of other familiar voice actors.
Seth Green's in that one, isn't he?
Yeah. I particularly like the voice cast for the female Shepard, Jennifer Hale, who also worked on Baldur's Gate, Knights of the Old Republic. The female Shepard is just like just the right blend of over it. Like,
we just thought we'd check in with you guys. We're working on some special episodes coming up and just let you know what we've been consuming lately. That way we don't have to take up time during the episodes to do it, and we can spend more time talking about the movies, which is something I think you guys want. But you want to check out the podcast on Facebook. You want to find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Audible, Spotify, basically wherever good podcasts are caught. And especially engage with us over there on Facebook. Listen, folks, we don't pay for many ads, and that's really how Facebook wants you to do it. They want you to pay to get your Facebook in front of people.
We're not going to tell you how to live, but if you make a comment, it helps you see more of our great content. The more you interact with our page, the better our page does. And it's something you can do for free for us.
As always, you can check us out here at the Nighthawks Podcast, nighthawkspodcast.com. Also, be sure to check us out when we contribute or when anybody contributes. All of the panelists over there at the One of Us Network are really good folks, and they know their stuff. But check us out on Screener Squad, checking out some of these in-release films. Have I missed anything?
I don't see how you could have. Can be time for go to bed now? Let's put this one in the crate, because it's almost morning.
All right, go ahead and cut.